Representative Mary Murphy. Representative Mary Murphy.
Murphy present.
Representative Dean Erdahl.
Erdahl present.
Representative Dean Erdahl present. Representative Esther Abadje.
Abadje present.
Representative Esther Abadje present. Representative Kayla Berg.
Berg present.
Representative Kayla Berg present. Representative Greg Davids.
Davids present.
Representative Greg Davids present. Representative Keith Frankie.
Frankie present.
Representative Keith Frankie present. Representative Mike Freiberg.
Present.
Representative Mike Freiberg present. Representative Rick Hansen.
Hansen present.
Representative Rick Hansen present. Representative John Hewitt.
Hewitt present.
Representative John Hewitt present. Representative Leon Lilly.
Here.
Representative Leon Lilly present. Representative Eric Lucero.
It's a good day to be alive.
Representative Eric Lucero present. Representative Rena Moran.
Moran present.
Representative Rena Moran present. Representative Nels Pearson.
Pearson present.
Representative Nels Pearson present. Representative Donald Raleigh.
Raleigh present and happy to be here.
Representative Donald Raleigh present. Representative Jordan Rasmussen.
Present.
Representative Jordan Rasmussen present. Representative Liz Ryer.
Ryer present.
Representative Liz Ryer present. Representative Nolan West. Representative Nolan West. Representative Jay Zhang.
Jay Zhang present.
Representative Jay Zhang present. Representative Nolan West. Members, with the conclusion of the roll call, if you could please mute your devices, a quorum is present.
Thank you, Mr. Lanchesky, and please note any members that may have missed roll call when they are present in your record keeping. Representative Murphy, can I have a motion to approve the minutes for January 19th, please?
Mr. Chair, I move approval of the minutes for January 19th.
Vice Chair Murphy moves approval of the minutes for January 19th. Any discussions? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes for January 19th are approved. Now, members, we'll move on to the a presentation from the Minnesota Management and Budget Office on the capital budget application process for state agencies and local units of government. The Assistant Commissioner and Capital Budget Coordinator will be outlining the timeline, information submitted in request, and the constitutional and statutory requirements for local units of government and for our state agencies. For reference, last cycle capital budget requests totaled over $5.3 billion with $4 billion from the state agencies and $1.3 billion from our local governments. And projects were submitted from each corner in every region of the state. With that, want to kick it off to Commissioner Jen Hassemer. Please state your name for the record and begin with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Jennifer Hassemer, Assistant Commissioner for Debt Management. I'm going to turn it right over to Marianne Convoy, the Capital Budget Coordinator, to start walking through the capital budget process this morning.
Great. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. We have a presentation, and I believe staff was going to pull it up and share it over Zoom. Thank you, Jenny. Great. Mr. Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to be here today. My name is Marianne Convoy, and I'm the Capital Budget Coordinator at Minnesota Management and Budget. And with me today, as you know, is Jen Hassemer, the Assistant Commissioner for Debt Management at MMB. We're providing an overview of the capital budget process for agencies and political subdivisions for projects that are submitting through MMB. And generally speaking, this process and the timing are the same for agencies and political subdivisions. But in this presentation, we will provide extra details and focus on how it relates to political subdivisions as you work with your constituencies. I also want to note that although local government projects can be introduced into a bonding bill directly through state legislators without starting in this process, we encourage local governments to submit their projects through MMB as well, because this process provides a pathway for MMB to review the projects on the front end, and it provides a publication of all the projects under consideration by the governor and the legislature. Today, I will provide an overview of the process for state agencies and political subdivisions, and that includes the information that we collect and publish, the work that we do as well. And then Commissioner Hassemer will speak to the allowable capital expenditures and additional requirements that apply to local projects that are funded in bonding bills. And at the end of the presentation, we'll provide a couple slides of some resources that we have on MMB's website. Next slide. An important question to start is, how are projects submitted to MMB and when are those deadlines? Next slide. So this is a preliminary timeline and we don't have firm dates yet, but here you can see a high level schedule of the 2022 capital budget cycle, which begins in just a few months. With this process, MMB follows the timeline set in statute, which generally results in an operating budget in the odd numbered year and a capital budget in the even numbered year. For the capital budget, statute specifically requires that requests are submitted to the legislature by July 15th of each odd numbered year, and the governor's recommendations are submitted by January 15th of each even numbered year. And so certainly a capital budget could pass in an odd year, such as 2021, as well. But this presentation focuses on the process leading up to the 2022 capital budget. So from March until about May, MMB will authorize users of the capital budget system, also known as CBS, which is a web-based application where projects are submitted. For local units of government submitting projects, users must be staff or an official of that local unit of government in order to submit a project. And one highlight is that local projects must be in final submitted status of the data they submit by June in CBS in order to be included in our publications. But they can make revisions to projects submitted in June through the October deadline, which I'll get to in a moment. When preliminary projects are due in June, that's around the time that MMB begins site visits. And in the 2020 cycle, the governor also made many site visits, also known as bonding tours. And in the summer, we do a lot of outreach from MMB, asking about projects to really understand their scope. And that's the stage that we really learn everything we can about projects that are submitted. July 15th is a big day. That's the day that preliminary budget requests from state agencies and local units of government are published by MMB. So as I understand it, this point in time often serves as a springboard for bonding tours for you all. By mid-October, we require that both state agencies and local requests that were submitted in the preliminary status are finalized. And this is the point where we need to know the final costs, the final project scope, and so forth, so that we can prepare materials for governor's decision-making. Throughout the fall and winter, we work internally at MMB to do additional analysis, and we meet with the governor and the governor's staff. Then on January 15th, all the final requests are published alongside the governor's capital budget recommendations to the legislature. At that point, it's within your purview in the legislature to include projects in your bonding bill and to move capital project funding to final passage.
Ms. Convoy, Representative Murphy has a question.
Oh, sure.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Convoy, you've mentioned publishing a lot today. And could you explain what you mean by publish? And where can people find the published materials?
Ms. Conboy?
Mr. Chair, and members, thank you for the question. So typically NMB will submit the projects directly to members of this committee in what we call books. So we would basically be sending those directly to members of this committee so that they know that that publication has happened. And in addition to that, on July 15th and on January 15th, on MMB's website, the same information is published for the public to see as well. So locals that submitted projects, people that are interested, anybody can see like the full scope of the, all the agency projects and all the local projects on MMB's website.
Representative Murphy?
And that means that all the questions that were answered and the materials or any introductory letters that the agency or the local community has sent along with their answers to your questions, that would all be in the publication.
Ms. Conboy.
Mr. Chair and members, thanks for the question. The information that we publish is the information that is submitted in the capital budget system. So we don't like include like any additional like notes or anything like that that we do as we just like work to understand it and that back and forth with locals. But there's a ton of information about that I'll describe in the in another slide that gets into the request amount, how they rank the project, a description, a timeline, you know, funding that's associated with the project. All those details, and there's a lot of them, are published at both the July 15th and the January 15th.
Thank you.
Murphy?
Thank you.
Please proceed, Ms. Conboy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so by mid-October, we require that both state agencies and local requests are finalized. And that's the point where we need to know the final costs and the final scope of these projects. Then throughout the fall and the winter, we work internally at MMB to do additional analysis, and we meet with the governor and the governor's staff. And then that January 15th date is when all those final requests are published, like we just talked about, along with the governor's recommendations. And then throughout session, as you know, there's lots of discussions around projects. And then the final stage is hopefully there is a bonding bill by May 17th, 2022, when the legislature adjourns. And I want to note that this timing can be especially important to bonding bills due to the summer and fall timing of the state's bond sales. So that's a very high level calendar for this process. And I just want to highlight that even though the next big bonding bill might not get enacted until 2022, the process leading up to it starts in just a few months. Are there any questions about the timeline? Okay, I can move on to the next slide. I do want to provide a quick highlight of the Capital Budget System, or CBS. MMB publishes preliminary requests, final requests, and the governor's capital budget recommendations using the data entered in CBS. This is a relatively new web-based application that opened in May 2015 ahead of the 2016 capital budget cycle. Prior to that, I understand that local projects came to us on paper applications. So having this as a web-based application really opens up the process. Project requests are submitted to MMB with adequate information to provide statutorily required details and to allow for meaningful conversation and consideration of the project by the governor and the legislature. And as I mentioned on the previous slide, state agencies and local government staff or officials can start entering projects into CBS in May of this year for the 2022 capital budget cycle. And as a reminder, the political subdivisions that can enter these projects into CBS are defined in Minnesota Statutes 3.986 as a school district, a county, or a home rule charter or statutory city. Next slide. Another question that we frequently receive is which state agencies will local governments work with in this process? Next slide. The first agency is Minnesota Management and Budget, and we provide instructions and forms about how the process works. Our role really is to collect and present capital budget information in a standard format for both state agencies and local units of government for decision makers. We also calculate the cost of proposed bonding packages, and we forecast debt service costs of future bonding bills. And I will say a word about the current forecast. The November 2020 forecast assumes that there will be a $240 million bonding bill in 2021 and an $880 million bonding bill in 2022. These amounts are based on a 10-year rolling historic average of the size of enacted bonding bills. So anything over that amount comes as a cost to the general fund. In addition, MMB assists with issues that may arise in implementation. For example, when appropriation language in an enacted year needs to be amended to account for the scope of the work that is included in the project. And just a plug, we really encourage local units of government to submit their projects in CBS because that allows MMB to review the projects early on and avoids issues down the line. Next slide. The next agency with a pretty significant role is the Department of Administration. Their roles outlined here are required in statute. The first responsibility is to review pre-design of projects before the design and subsequent phases of a project begin for both state agencies and local units of government. Admin also informs projects about the sustainable building guidelines and high performance building practices, which are required in statute for new construction or major renovation projects that receive bond proceeds. Local units of government also work with a granting agency. So we cannot appropriate money directly to a local unit of government. That money must flow through a state agency. So depending on the type of project, a certain state agency is effectively assigned in the bonding bill language to work as the granting agency for that local unit of government and project. Next slide. And in terms of what information is submitted and how will it be used, there is a lot of information collected in the capital budget system. Next slide. We require that state agencies and local governments submit their requests by amount and in priority order if they have more than one request. Then they provide a brief summary as well as a very detailed description of the project scope. They explain the rationale for why the project is needed and outline a general timeline for the project. And they provide information about any additional funding sources. I'll note that there is generally an expectation that a local unit of government is a cost participant in the project, and according to Minnesota statutes 16A.86, should provide at least half the total project cost. So that's why we ask to see what other sources are coming in to fund the project and whether those funds are committed or if they're pending and hoped for at that point. We also ask questions indicating whether certain statutory requirements apply or don't apply to the projects after adoption of the bonding bill. And there's a list of those questions linked at the end of this presentation. For local projects, we request that resolutions of support are submitted by the governing body of political jurisdictions. And really this backs up that the request being made is a priority for the city, county, or school district. Next slide. And then in terms of how that information in CBS gets published, Every request included in the materials that MMB publishes in July, every request is included in those materials that MMB publishes in July and January. And by published, that's put on our website so everyone can see them. Submitted requests will also be presented always in the following order. So first is a project summary, and that acts as a cover sheet. Projects are listed under each agency or local unit of government in priority order with the funding amounts requested for the 2022 capital budget, as well as if there's anticipated funding needs in 2024 and 2026. Second, the project narrative includes both short and detailed descriptions of the project scope. And then third, there's a project detail report behind each request, and that includes all the funding sources, the project costs in greater detail, and it lists answers to each statutory requirement question that applies to capital projects. And the next slide. So MMB takes all of the submitted project information and we evaluate it. We ask lots of questions and conduct site visits to fully understand the projects. And while these slides are not an exhaustive list of MMB's evaluation, I think it would be helpful for members to understand kind of what we're looking for in these requests. First and foremost, we look to ensure that the project is eligible for the requested funding source, which is most frequently GEO bonds. I'll get into some detail about this in two slides. At MMB, we also look to ensure that all the required information has been entered into the capital budget system. We review projects to understand what problem the project addresses, if the project serves a statewide or regionally significant purpose, and if the project can be completed in phases.
We Ms. also Convoy? Review.
Oh, sure.
So I have a question for you regarding the second bullet point. What happens if a project doesn't have the required information for the statutory requirements?
So, Mr. Chair, MMB will work with these projects. So that's why there's like a lag from the time of submittal to the time of publication, because we do look through all of these projects and try to see if there is like a point of information that's missed or might need to be clarified before we publish. So we work with locals directly on those points.
So I'm particularly interested in the sustainable building guidelines. Is that once a project is submitted and they may, if there's a local project that does not meet that criteria, is it MMB or Department of Administration, or who will be reaching out to the local units of government to talk to them about that requirement?
So, I think that would be the Department of Administration, and that's that reach out, I believe, typically happens after the project is included in the bonding bill. And we have Wayne Wazlowski from the department on the call, I believe, if he can add further clarification.
Mr. Wazlowski?
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, Wayne Wazlowski, Senior Director for Real Estate and Construction Services. Mary Ann is correct. Typically, we're not connected in with the, our connection point with the local unit of government requests is when they submit a pre-design document to us, or if there's conversations that are happening during the capital budget process, during the legislative process. So mainly it happens at the pre-design step where we're seeing, we're communicating again the statutory requirements that have to be met, including the sustainability requirements. We're also connecting them to the University of Minnesota Center for Sustainable Building Research. That is the entity that oversees the sustainability guidelines in cooperation with the admin and Department of Commerce. So there's a resource, a technical resource available to the local units of government should they have questions about the requirements.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Ms. Convoy. What about if a request is made not through a local entity, but by a state representative who is proposing a project that has statewide significance requiring bonding dollars?
Ms. Convoy.
So sometimes there are projects that do not go through our process as described in this presentation. And in those cases, if you'd like us to MMB to review those projects for like the similar information that's here, if you'd like to reach out to myself or Assistant Commissioner Hassimer, we'd be happy to review those projects as well.
Representative Erdahl.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Chairman and Ms. Convoy. Yes, just so that folks understand that this is a system that mainly local entities do go through or should go through, but that there are other proposals that don't necessarily do so, as I just outlined, and also maybe dealing with nonprofits as well. Ms. Convoy, you might just reference the nonprofit eligibility and how that would work.
Ms. Convoy.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the question. So following the Minnesota statutes that pertain to the preparation of the capital budget, MMB receives and publishes capital budget requests from state agencies and political subdivisions. Nonprofit organizations may work with a political subdivision to request geo bonds for a project in instances where the project would be for a public purpose and owned by the political subdivision. The political subdivision itself would submit the project to MMB. And it's important to note in instances like this, the political subdivision must have an ownership interest in the project, and it's not simply a fiscal sponsor or a pass-through entity. Nonprofit organizations that have a capital budget request, but the project will not be owned by a political subdivision, they can share project information with MMB. And although the request is not posted as part of this statutory process, it's helpful for MMB to review these projects early on before the session begins. So we're happy to help review these projects for nonprofits, whether they're submitted through a political subdivision or if it would be a standalone project.
Thank you, Ms. Convoy, for emphasizing that the local units of government will be the public owner and not a fiscal sponsor. Representative Erdahl, any follow-up?
Yes, thank you, Ms. Chairman and Ms. Convoy. And also, I might note that for those who are newer to this process, that with nonprofits, there is also sometimes the cases where they don't get geo bonds, but are directly given cash from the general fund in bonding bills.
Ms. Convoy.
That is correct, Mr. Chair and members, depending on the type of project.
Representative Erdahl, any follow-up?
No, that's it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Convoy, you said that the state agency or the local school district or the city or the county can submit submit projects for approval. Another elected body is the Soil and Water Conservation Districts. Where would they submit their application for a state bonding project?
Ms. Convoy.
I can get back to you on that one, but I think that that might be included in, I'll just have to get back to you on that one. Jennifer, Assistant Commissioner Hassimer, do you know the answer to that?
Commissioner Hassimer?
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, there are other entities defined in statute as political subdivisions of the state. So it would depend on if the statute for the Soil and Water Conservation District defined them as a political subdivision. And assuming they are, then they would also be able to submit in the CBS system for a local project.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you.
Please proceed, Ms. Conboy.
So we look to see if a project can be served in our analysis by an existing grant program at a state agency as well. We also analyze the projects to see if the project can be completed with non-state funds. And we also look to see if there might be a request coming down the line for additional state operating subsidies. And again, making sure that the project serves a public purpose and that local government's leadership shows support of the project with a local resolution of support. Next slide. And as mentioned before, when a project is submitted through MMB's process, a key evaluation that we make is to ensure the project described is eligible for the requested funding source. I feel like this is like one of our most important jobs. And most often the requested funding source is geobonds, and that requires the project to be publicly owned and operated and serve a public purpose. When projects are submitted, MMB can identify if a project or if a part of a project should actually tie to a different funding source. This vetting provides an advantage to submitted projects because the proper funding source is something that decision makers need to know when putting together their recommendations, and issues identified later can cause implementation problems. Some alternative financing mechanisms that can be considered include the trunk highway bonds, state appropriation bonds, and general fund cash. Next slide. We also want to speak to the restrictions that come with receiving geobond proceeds. This information is helpful for local projects to be aware of. And so with that, I'd like to turn it over to Assistant Commissioner Hassemer.
Commissioner Hassemer.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mary Ann, and members of the committee. Again, I'm Jennifer Hassemer, Assistant Commissioner at MNB. So I'd like to spend just a little time walking you through at a very high level the guiding legal principles that apply to bonding projects. These are an important factor in MMB's review of the initial project submissions that will be due in June. As you've already heard, the Constitution specifies all the various purposes for which general obligation debt can be issued. The vast majority of the projects that this committee will be considering fall within the authority in Article 11, Section 5A of the Constitution, which authorizes the state to issue debt to acquire and better public land and buildings and to make other capital improvements. This could be for a specific project or a state agency grant program. And this authority requires a 3/5 vote in both the House and the Senate. The key takeaways are that projects must be for a public purpose, must be publicly owned, must be for capital expenditures, which I'll go over in some more detail in a few slides, and must be clearly defined in law. This means that the law must identify either a specific project or a specific grant program, and it also means that the law must specify all the desired project activities. Since you've already heard about some proposed technical changes from the most recent bonding bill, I'm sure you already have a sense that if a certain activity is not specified in the appropriation, then state funds may not be spent on those activities, even if they are capital expenditures. So turning to the next slide, what are allowable capital expenditures? The Constitution speaks of acquisition, betterments, and improvements. The following are the guiding principles on the use of state bonds. First, the expenditure must relate to a fixed asset with a useful life of at least 10 years. This can include land, buildings, capital equipment, or other improvements to land, but it does not include standalone or short-lived equipment. Bonds can be used to acquire land or easements or rights of way or buildings, and to pre-design or design projects. Construction costs can include work necessary to prepare the site, such as environmental remediation and other site preparation. Improvements to existing buildings must constitute a substantial renovation or upgrade and extend the building's useful life or increase its value. Furniture, fixtures, and equipment, or FF&E, must be purchased and installed as part of a construction or major renovation project if it's needed to make the facility function as intended. But FF&E on its own is not an eligible capital expenditure. Asset preservation is a subcategory of bonding that still needs to be for these eligible expenditures. Under the various state asset preservation statutes, these appropriations are targeted to major building system renewals, projects to preserve the structural integrity of existing buildings, and projects correcting health and safety issues. On the next slide, I'll walk you through several examples of what would not constitute an eligible capital expenditure. As you can see on this list, ineligible costs include options to purchase land or buildings, FF&E, as I just mentioned, and various expenditures that indicate a project is still too early of a planning stage to be considered capital. These include studies that evaluate the need for a project or its location, as projects need to be sited in order to be eligible for bonding, master planning efforts, computer or financial modeling for unsighted projects, or educational or promotional costs. Turning to the next slide, continuing the list, ineligible costs can also include demolition that is not connected to any associated redevelopment, relocation and moving costs, operating and maintenance costs, including minor repairs such as broken windows or minor roof repairs, the repair or replacement of worn out portions of equipment, or replacement of items that typically do not last as long as the original structure, such as carpeting or painting. These are all considered current year expenses that should be paid for from operating dollars. Additionally, general obligation bonds cannot be used for software or data management systems or marketing expenses. Turning to the next slide, shifting gears just a little.
Commissioner, I just have a question before you move on. Oftentimes we hear from local units of government about the possibility of reimbursement for projects that have started. Can you speak to that, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you for the question. Federal tax law imposes limitations on the state's ability to reimburse projects for costs incurred before a bonding bill is enacted. So the key date for local units of government considering going through this process is that the state will consider reimbursing for costs once a bonding bill takes effect, which is usually the day after the governor signs it into law.
Thank you, Commissioner. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in that vein, both federal tax law and state law place additional restrictions on the use of state bond financed property. Federal tax law applicable to tax-exempt bonds presumes that the bonds are being issued for a defined governmental purpose. It places restrictions on any private benefit that might result from a project's use of bond proceeds in a concept called private use. Private use is broadly defined as any direct or indirect use by a non-governmental entity. This could be through a lease or management contract, an output contract, or other special legal entitlements or economic benefits. Federal tax law also limits the amount of private use the state can have, a mere $15 million per bond sale. Exceeding this limit would threaten the tax-exempt status of the state's bonds. There can be available IRS safe harbors, but the key is advanced planning. We strongly encourage entities that may be considering a relationship with a non-governmental entity to engage with MNB at the earliest opportunity to identify and resolve any potential issues. Turning to the next slide, State law sets up various processes that help MNB monitor these private use issues. 16A 695 requires MNB to approve any use, lease, management, or similar agreement being entered into for state bond finance property. These use agreements must be for the purpose of carrying out the governmental program identified in the bonding bill. Because of the constitutional public ownership requirement, the term of any use contract must be substantially less than the project's useful life, with the rule of thumb being a term no greater than 50% of the useful life. And the state agency or local unit of government must retain ongoing oversight of the program. An entity may generally collect revenues to cover its annual operating costs, but any excess revenues must be shared with the state. Turning to the next slide, this is a sampling of the types of projects or agreements that might give rise to private use concerns and will be looked at closely by MNB. Projects such as convention centers, sports facilities, business incubators, and airport terminals can involve leases and uses by a variety of different business interests. Concessions and parking garages often involve private managers. And even naming rights, sponsorships, research contracts, cell phone towers, and solar panels can also all give rise to private use. So there are some other requirements to be aware of as you consider the capital budget proposals that will be coming before you. So advancing to slide 23, all capital projects, project appropriations to a local unit of government will require the local unit of government to enter into a grant agreement with the state agency identified in the legislation. Grant agreements are not required for a state agency's own capital projects. MNB has prepared templates for state agencies to use for the local projects and has made these available on our website. Potential grantees may review those agreements at any time for a better understanding of the agreement terms. There are forms for specifically identified projects in a bonding bill, for projects selected through a state grant program, and for projects receiving general fund money. On the next slide, the public entity receiving the grant must have independent statutory authority to undertake the project. Bonding bills themselves do not generally create this authority. Further, local governments, as you've heard, should not view themselves as pass-throughs for another entity. The grant recipient named in law is expected to actively oversee the ongoing operation of the project. Additionally, grant recipients will need to demonstrate to the state agency administering their grant that they have the ability and a plan to fund ongoing operations of the program. This can be in the form of budget resolutions or may involve a review of more detailed financial statements. And finally, turning to slide 25, 16A 502 requires that all financing needed to complete a project must be in place before any grant funds will be made available to the grant recipient. When MNB approves full funding for a project and allows the release of state funds, those determinations are made based on the scope of the project identified in the bill language. So this is another reason to draft riders carefully and to only include those elements that make up the project being selected for funding. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would like to turn the presentation back to Ms. Conboy to explain some additional resources that are available to all of you.
Please proceed, Ms. Conboy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Starting on slide 26, we begin the section that includes some resources. So turning to slide 27, we have statutory requirements and bonding resources linked here for your reference. Turning to slide 28, these links continue for the statutory requirements. And on slide 29, I want to mention that the bottom two statutory requirements are added to this list because they were updated in October. This is the certificates of compliance for public contracts requirement. wherein affirmative action plan certificate of compliance is required for state agency contracts exceeding $100,000 and political subdivision contracts exceeding $250,000 that use GEO bonds, and the equal pay certificate of compliance, which is required for state agency contracts exceeding $500,000 and political subdivision contracts exceeding $1 million that use GEO bonds. And these requirements apply to a capital project or a discrete phase of a capital project that is appropriated bond proceeds on or after January 1st, 2022. So that means that it impacts the 2022 bonding bill and forward. And on the next slide, I also have some additional resources.
Ms. Conboy, before you go, we have a question from Representative Erdahl. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Ms. Chair and Ms. Conboy. I just wish, would you clarify from the previous slide, are they statute or rulemaking? How are these compiled?
Ms. Conboy.
Mr. Chair, thank you for the question. This is from statute. And so the statutes are linked here. And so the previous two slides, as well as this one, are all statutory requirements.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Conboy.
Please proceed, Ms. Conboy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we have on our website, we have an FAQ, instructions, policies, and checklists. And these instructions are going to be updated in the coming months for specifically for the 2022 cycle. So if you see old dates, they'll be updated soon. And then the legal information section at the bottom, which includes bond counsel opinions, if you're interested in those.
Ms. Conboy, so I have a question regarding bond counsel opinions. How often are they updated, and do you anticipate any new opinions or updates in the near future?
Mr. Chair, Assistant Commissioner Hassimer would be the best person to answer this question.
Commissioner Hassimer?
Mr. Chair, thank you. We regularly work with the state's bond council. There haven't been formal published opinions in quite some time. So we don't anticipate at this time any new opinions being published on our website. Everything that's still there are still good and valid opinions that the state still follows.
Commissioner Hassimer, can you just let members know who is our bond council right now?
Mr. Chair, sure. Our bond council, we work both with the Attorney General's office that serves as bond counsel to the state, and they also appoint an outside private firm to give outside advice, and our current bond counsel is QTAC Rock.
Thank you, Commissioner. Please proceed, Ms. Conboy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that concludes our formal presentation. And we really appreciate you taking the time having us here today. And members, thank you so much for listening as well. And we'd be happy to take any questions. If there's ever any issues that arise or questions that you have, we listed our contact information at the end of this presentation. So please feel free to reach out.
So we do have a question from Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On Tuesday, we heard multiple bills seeking corrections to the bonding bill that we passed last year so that it aligned more closely with the needs of the communities that had projects in that bill. I guess I'm just wondering to what extent MMB actually takes a look at the legislative language itself and stays involved with the process as the bill moves through, just to make sure that the language that's passed ultimately comports with the expectations of the communities that have projects in the bill.
Ms. Conboy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question. I think, so Assistant Commissioner Hassimer works most closely with the language associated with these. But I will say that we work to try to follow these as closely as we can. And certainly, throughout the process, as language is shared And Assistant Commissioner Hassamer, I don't know if you want to elaborate on that too.
Commissioner Hassamer?
Mr. Chair and Representative, MMB does follow the language very closely, as Marianne, Ms. Convoy has indicated, and that includes even the technical corrections. Our goal is always to make sure and help you all make sure that when a bonding bill passes, the language is going to allow the projects to move forward as everyone intends. So we do pay very close attention to the language, and to that end, the better the description that comes to the state through the capital budget process, as well as through legislative hearings, only serves to continue aiding the drafting of any bill language.
And I would just like to add, Representative Freiberg, that it is my hope that our members work with their local units of government to provide MMB with the language that they seek so that MMB can provide some comments on that. Representative Freiberg.
Thank you. My question was answered.
Next up, we have Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner and Ms. Convoy. I have a really simple question. You talked about the three reports that are available to legislators, and where can those be found? I see links to many things, but I'd be interested in seeing past reports just to understand them better.
Ms. Convoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question. I can share a link after this meeting as well, but on MMB's website, under current capital budget, you can see the preliminary agency requests and preliminary local units of government requests, as well as the final agency and final local requests.
Thank you, Ms. Convoy. So please send that to Ms. Jenny Nash and Mr. Lincheski, and we'll make sure to get it out to our members. Representative Ryer, any follow-up?
No, thank you.
All right, members, do we have any additional questions for the commissioner or for Ms. Convoy? All right, seeing no further questions, thank you, Commissioner, and thank you, Ms. Looks Convoy, like, for...
Clearly, it looks like Representative Murphy.
Okay. Sorry, Representative Murphy.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I can't find what I need at the bottom of my thing now. But Commissioner or Ms. Conway, at the beginning of your presentation, you said that we could have $240 million bill in 2021 and an $800 plus bill in 2022. If we did not do a $240 million bill in 2021, can we have a $1.1 billion something in 2022?
Commissioner Hassamer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, the $240 million and $880 million are the forecasted assumptions, and those are not expected to change moving into the 2022 session next year. If there's no bill this year, the assumption for the even year legislative sessions will remain at $880 million. You'll recall we presented on the maximum debt capacity last week as well. That would be updated for next year based on any action or no action this year on the bonding bill.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you.
Any additional questions, members? All right, seeing none, thank you, Commissioner Hassamer and Ms. Convoy, for coming in to provide that overview. I hope that our local units of government are watching, and for members to please share this with your units of government if they are considering any local projects. And so members, before we adjourn for today, I just wanted to give you a update for what to expect for next week. We will be looking at how do we look at capital investment through a racial equity lens. We know that that wasn't part of some of the requirements that were shared today by MMB. And so on Tuesday, January 26th, we'll be hearing from Dr. Bruce Corey, who will be giving a presentation on the economic impact of racism and the need for equity in capital projects. And then we'll also be hearing from three projects that were funded in the 2020 the October 2020 bonding bill that was paid with from general fund cash to come and present their bonding proposal for us. And then also for next Friday, we will be having a joint hearing next week with the Climate and Energy Committee, and you will be receiving the notice for those meetings later today. And seeing no other questions or discussion, this meeting is adjourned.